Well, good afternoon and welcome. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com as well as www.freedomslips.com, Studio B Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 16th, 2016, and I have to apologize for missing the show last Thursday. I was on an airplane. It was supposed to be in hours earlier and wasn't. So nothing I can. Couldn't even reach anybody to give a heads up. Anyway, that being said, my guest today is managing editor of VeteransToday.com, Mr. Jim Dean. Jim, welcome to the show, sir.
Good to be back, and it hasn't been too long since I saw you last.
Well, it hasn't. In fact, I was your guest in your home Sunday evening. And
which
I want to thank you. It was very nice meeting your. I just want to thank you for having me over. It was very great. I loved meeting your beautiful new bride, and it was a nice evening, and thank you so much.
Well, and it's quite a surprise to get a Sunday afternoon call from Mike Harris to say he's the guest where I am. I'm in Atlanta.
So, I'm in Atlanta with nothing to do. What are you up to?
What if somebody said, how much would you like to bet that Mike Harris is going to call you and he's in Atlanta? And I would have lost $100 probably on that.
Okay, well, I still owe you $100 checks in the mail.
Okay, but we had a good time, and I got to show you my pet rocks. And we had a little wine. And actually, folks, the first person from Veterans Today to actually visit me here, although... Mike and I have been to Syria, which we're going to be discussing a little later. But lots of stuff going on this week, Michael.
Yes, indeed there is. There has been a lot of stuff going on. You look at the situation where the Syrian army, with the help of Russian air support and Iranian ground and Hezbollah militia, have been able to nearly take back Aleppo and isolate the mercenary terrorists of ISIS inside Syria, after which, once that they're isolated, it will literally be, forgive the pun, it will be a turkey shoot.
Amen. And speaking of turkey shoot, Gordon and I had done we did kind of a double sit rep yesterday. It went up. We've been trying to do those. They're kind of popular because a lot of this war stuff is hard to follow on the ground. The names are totally unfamiliar. Everybody's unfamiliar with the geography. So you can read the text reports. And we have found, because we have to struggle with it ourselves, we have to get Google Earth out. And Gordon and I often...
Yeah.
We'll get, go ahead.
Get Google Earth out and actually look.
And look. And the nice thing about Gordon is he's been using it for so long, and he's so fast. I mean, he can just zoom, zoom, zoom. So, and it is so wonderful because you can zoom in, you can switch over, you can have your map aspects of it, and then you have your, you can get a look at the land. So we started out with trying to take a good look. We had the report in the morning that the Turks were shelling the Kurdish positions where they had pushed some of the jihadis out. And these jihadis were not moderate opposition. These were al-Qaeda groups that Turkey had been surviving, you know, dyed-in-the-wool terrorists that they're trying to... display in sheep's clothing by calling them the opposition when they are, but they're also a terrorist. And we had kind of a surprise. The media were showing these 155 tracked howitzers because they're more dramatic. And through some friends and contacts we had, we were able to get a peek of exactly what they were firing. And as it turned out, they had two 105s, which are the smaller run-of-the-mill artillery pieces that you actually have to be trucked in. And they had them in a field north of the last town, the road going into Turkey, that had been one of the main supply roads of supplying Aleppo. But it was a very unusual situation. They had two guns, half a battery. Six people, no security, and not much ammo. They were they were actually ferrying ammo in via ambulances, so that they wouldn't have projectiles and then propellant all laying all over the place, so that if they had counter battery fire, it would all go up in a big pile of smoke. So, and that right away, what we discovered is it was what we call a disposable target, that they knew it was very highly likely that the Russians would come in and bomb it. And in one of my little lead-ins, I wrote, I said, I wonder what those six artillery guys had done to draw that duty, because they were basically being used as bait. And of course, the Russians were not about to bait having an incident of live fire on Turkish soil over a couple of 105s.
Yeah, the risk reward wasn't generous enough.
Yep. And then the other thing that told us is that they were really wanting to put a whooping on the folks across the border. They would have been using 155s, which they certainly have a lot of, because they're a devastating weapon. The last thing in the world you want to be having coming down on you. You take just about anything else versus that. Much more accurate, longer range. So
it's a 30-mile 155 currently has about a 30-mile range. If they've got rocket-propelled projectiles, they can go further. But the standard artillery round on a 155 is a 30-mile,
right.
And the 155 is about 12 miles.
And if they have,
I'm sorry, I misspoke. The 105 is 12 miles. The 155 is 30 miles. I want to speak clearly. I misspoke. Forgive me.
And the 155s, if you can afford the shells and have the satellite hookups, they can be flown and can be dropped on moving targets, even a technical, actually. So there, if you really want to shut the roads down, all you got to do is drop some 155 rounds on some moving technicals, and the road will be clear. No one will be going on that. So. So what we had going on is, Turkey basically, in effect, was doing a no-go area. They weren't going in, but they were basically doing a buffer zone by saying, we're going to use our 105 artillery. We do not want the Kurds coming up to the border. And then here's the tricky part to this legally. It's Kurdish territory, really. The Syrians don't have any problem coming up to the border. And so Turkey has no legal grounds whatsoever. What they're claiming is we don't want them transferring arms across the border to Kurds across the border, which is really stupid, because I think with the Kurds, fighting, have enough enemies to fight over in Syria, I don't think they're going to be giving their weapons and ammo away, get involved in another war in Turkey. But they just want to basically show, they also want to stand up their allies, because they know after Aleppo kind of gets cleared out, that they want to start moving east on ISIL. So Turkey was kind of making this demonstration to the ISIL crowd that's still over there, that we are going to give you artillery support from over the border. And that could be problematic for them. The Kurds and some of the Syrians over the border have taken some casualties, because they even shelled the town of Azaz. But the Russians were very careful. There was no counterfire. The Syrians, we're hearing now, have had some counterfire. But the Syrians went ahead and lined Russia up to go into the UN Security Council, which they did today. And they had their session, and they came out of it with a unanimous declaration that Syria should obey international law and stop shelling over the border into another UN member's country. And, of course, that was a request. There's no threats at this point. But part of the game I think the Russians and the Syrians are doing here is playing rope-a-dope. getting the media that Turkey's doing something they're not supposed to do. The U.S. and Britain came out fairly quickly, urging Turkey not to shell. Surprisingly, Merkel was been on the phone. She's supporting Erdogan. And this morning was in the news that she was calling for a no-fly zone over Syria. And this is somebody that's about ready to go into local elections, which from what we're being told from our German sources, her party is going to lose significantly. And she may be out of a job within a few weeks here. So we still can't get over how the Turks have gotten their hooks into Merkel so much. But there is a split now. You have some major NATO countries kind of split. And it is good to see that Turkey is not getting a blank check by all the NATO countries. So that's kind of...
it's good, but let's talk a little deeper here, because there's some, you know, when Syria is successful in cutting off ISIL from their supply and the noose begins to tighten around them, Turkey and Saudi Arabia, Israel, and the U.S. CIA is going to get very, very desperate, because once the ISIL terrorists are destroyed and all of that intelligence that's there is captured and analyzed, it's going to tell the entire world exactly who created ISIL. The jig will be up, and these foreign intelligence agencies that were the impetus behind this are going to be exposed. And so that's why Turkey, there are, let me say it, rumors that Saudi Arabia is moving their F-16s and F-15s to Turkey, to the what's that, Interlik Air Force Base there. I'm pronouncing it wrong. But they're moving their air force there, and that Turkey is massing one of their armies on the Syrian border in order to prevent that from happening. So these are some big developments.
A lot of shadow boxing. Today that's been kind of evolving. The U.S., of course, when people started offering themselves as ground operations, the Ash Carter was like, thank you very much. We appreciate the offer. So they grabbed the headlines on that. The next day, though, it comes out they were talking about the forces they were talking about are special operations people. That's generally how the camel sticks its nose in the tent to start. Special operations are always on the ground in situations like this. The French, the British, and the U.S. have been on the ground probably constantly, because you need them for targeting, particularly for airstrikes. So that's initially what they were talking about. And then you had the Turks and the Saudis are supposed to be doing joint operations. I'm not quite sure whose territory they're going to be doing that on, unless they're planning and doing it in Anbar province. That's quite a logistics thing. So that seemed kind of strange. But then the Saudis blinked first. The foreign minister said that whatever ground operations they participated in, that it would be under a U.S.-led ground operation as part of the coalition. And Turkey today came out and said early in the morning that they weren't not going to initiate a ground operation into Syria. So the air went over those tires, out of those tires. And just when I check now, that's been filled out a little bit more, that Turkey says that they also would participate in a U.S., a coalition ground operation. And he kind of predicted, the Turkish foreign minister, that that's what would be required to eventually to be able to defeat ISIS. And of course, Mike, you and I both know that they're dead wrong there, that the Syrian coalition is quite capable of defeating ISIL and can probably do so in a couple of months with their own ground forces. And they do not need these outside forces to do it. So what we have been predicting here is the terrorist supporters are also desperate to hang on to some valuable key territory, some main roads, the oil producing areas, supply roads to be able to keep running terrorist operations while they were going through these long political talks that they were projected to last, you know, almost a year, getting ready for elections. And that is basically coming down, you know, before their eyes. Surprisingly, the Syrians have shown they've been able to continue attacking in multiple areas. They've been clearing south of Damascus. They're now pushing to the east. They're close to maybe within a few days of recapturing Raqqa, the Taqba airport that they lost a year or so ago. Very difficultly, they pulled out. They left a 150-man rear guard force there that ended up getting captured and ended up in a mass grave. So they're going to be getting that area. The U.S. has kind of got their little base up in the extreme northeast, backing the Kurds. So they're going to have their toe in there. And then Deir ez-Zor is going to be the last big battle. That's a 200,000 Syrians are under siege or being held hostage there. But the big game is the real moderate forces, they've been coming over. The ones that left the army, they've had an open-ended amnesty to come back over. And as the fortunes of war have gone against them, a lot of them have been taking that. And then there were those that were fighting ISIL and some of the jihadi groups over territory. They got smart and realized that if they joined, crossed over also, that the Russians and started fighting ISIL and al-Nusra, that they could have Russian air support. And the Russians made a widely publicized that they were bombing al-Nusra and ISIL targets with coordinates given to them by what they considered to be official opposition. So we're seeing here what we never thought would have been possible in terms of the speed, how coolly the Russians have operated. And from what we can see so far, which has been a big morale builder for the Syrian forces, they've kept their casualties under control. And that's always a big thing to be able to keep the spirits up, because it's hard to be in the front lines involved in offense because, you know,
whenever you're having heavy losses. Yeah. So I'm glad that they're keeping their losses to a minimum there.
So that's kind of Syria. But I was going to move on to another interesting little story, going back to NATO, the Ukraine, and some of the fencing that's been going on there. We had General Breedlove, the commander of NATO. This is the one that had told us early in the Ukraine war that the Russian army was coiled like a snake and was ready to be able to sweep across Ukraine in 3 days all the way to the West Ukrainian border, even though they were holding maneuvers in that area. And those maneuvers always have a lot of international observers all over the place. And none of the observers ever reported any of the usual preparations that you would need to launch an army to take over a country the size of Ukraine. And we knew that war was going to be a crazy war when the NATO commander would be allowed to make such a ridiculous falsehood that obviously was proved to be wrong, and he wasn't removed. So that means he was making those claims with permission from Washington. But he was at a big conference today, and to everyone's surprise, he said that the U.S. would be very happy to work with the Russians fighting Daesh closely.
Well, it's about time. And, you know, you and I and others have been lobbying for something that would be effective. Does the U.S. really want to fight terrorism, or is the U.S. the sponsor of terrorism? That's really what the test is.
Yep. And we were kind of surprised. We thought, my God, why would they pick the guy with like no credibility who's told more lies than about anybody we can think of? And here's I'm just going to use a couple of quotes here. He says, I'm sure that we would all welcome Russian help against DICE or ISIL. Hodges said, there's plenty incentive to work together. Russia needs the West in fighting against Islam extremism even more than the West needs Russia. That was kind of cute.
It's total BS. I mean, yeah. You know, it's
a little fanny covering there. But then he kind of goes and he went a little further. He said all this discussion about a new Cold War was not constructive. And here is what he said, quote, that is not not useful or constructive. It doesn't help people to think more clearly about the actual environment. So obviously he was backpedaling. This was not something that he was doing off the cuff. It was a prepared address. And of course, the challenge is going to be here. The Russians have been publicizing, not beating it every day, but they've said they have asked the U.S. to share. They have been willing to share intelligence on ISIL locations in terms of bombings. And so far, the U.S. from day one up until today has refused to do that. They have shared no intelligence on from their satellites or anything whatsoever. And there's a lot of us thought that that was really, really stupid, and it completely showed that they weren't really interested in coordinating and having a quick defeat of ISIL. They want to keep them there. That's their ace in the hole. But here, for some reason, it looks like somebody's flicked the switch and they've put him in play. And of course, on the same day he was saying this, we had the Turks say that they're not going to make a ground invasion by themselves and that that would only be part of a bigger situation. So, that was one of the last things. If somebody had told me General Breedlove is going to come out and he's going to lead the liaison team with cooperating with Russia, I just said that hell will freeze over. So we were quite surprised. So when I put that story up, it brought me to something else that'll be close to your heart because it talked about this working with Syria against ISIL. And it gave me the opportunity to tell a story that we have never told before.
Jim, we've got our break coming right here. Why don't we save the story for the other side of this break, okay? We'll be right back in a few minutes, folks. More with Managing Editor of Veterans Today, Mr. Jim Dean. Stick with us. Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com, also on www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 16th, 2016, and my guest is Managing Editor of VeteransToday.com, Mr. Jim Dean. And Jim, before the break, you were getting ready to tell a story that we could finally talk about from our first Syria trip.
Yes, and this talks about, there are people we're trying to build bridges, and because we saw this terrorism thing going crazy, and trying to see if we could test the waters on this silliness of the U.S. won't talk to Assad, and you have all these independent parties. We're going to work on Assad, including fighting a terrorist organization in another country, including air missions, without having their permission. And when we were at the counterterrorism conference 2014, December 1, which was kind of a historic VT event because of our fortunate video footage we got of Gordon's talk being the first person on the planet who laid out to a stunned audience how a lot of this terrorism and international destabilization and everything wasn't really political driven, wasn't religiously driven, that it was just plain old-fashioned crime on a level that most folks would have difficulty even comprehending. So that was the big story that we came back with, but we had another one that we couldn't. And that is we brought with us the highest ranking intelligence official ever to visit Turkey that we know of. I thought it was
Syria. Not Turkey. We were in Syria.
In Syria. And one of the issues coming up was that American planes being shot down, pilots ejecting, and after what had happened to some of the pilots and how ISIL has been treating and making propaganda videos, the topic came up of the air rescue teams would be coming flying in from Jordan, and also they had special ops people in Iraq. But that can be a long way to go for helicopter insertion teams. So it became kind of obvious that it would be much more sensible to have helicopter pilot rescue teams in a few places in Syria, but also coordinated with the Syrian government for very quick. Saving a pilot on the ground is almost always a matter of time, speed, being able to get there first.
Quickly, yeah.
Right. And so a certain party named Veterans Today brought that up. We knew we would be able to get an audience. And there was a very, very late night meeting with a very high official, security official in the Syrian government. And by the time we had left, we had gotten the okay from them that they would entertain hosting such search and rescue missions on their bases. But after returning and bringing this wonderful news back to the States and Washington, basically they flipped the bird to it. They said no.
No, they didn't say no. They said hell no is what they said. So,
yep. And again, so much for the pilots. We thought that their concern for the pilots' horrible situation where they got captured and roasted alive, like the Jordanian one and whatever. But we had to give it a try. And that, folks, we were able. I called Gordon today when I was doing my lead in, and I says, "Is it time to go ahead and put that in print?" And he said, "Yeah, go ahead and do it." But we thought as we start rolling through what we think is going to be the end of this, we don't want to wait several years until after it's over and start writing the books about what really happened. We want to be putting the wooden stakes through the hearts of those that will really drag this thing on. And that this ISIL thing, even when it was emerging, there could have been a much, much more concentrated effort. It would be done and over with already if it had been handled correctly. But there were powers that be that wanted to keep it going. They felt that they could control it with the money, and they had plans for it. And here we are, to their biggest surprise. And what happened, Mike? It ain't working out like they thought it would, because the Russians came in.
No, their master plan has been pushed aside.
Right. And they don't really have any cards to play, but now they're in these negotiations where they're going to try to buy some time. So it was nice to be able to share a story like that, because I tell you, folks, these trips are kind of draining to do, and a lot of times stuff we come back on, we're not able to write about, because you're sharing things with folks in confidence, and if they can be talked about, you have to wait to the right time.
Well, Jim, let me interject something here. We know about John McCain's involvement with ISIL. We have photographs of him with ISIL commanders in Syria. And John McCain is the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. And if anything, you would think that John McCain, being a captured airman who went down in enemy territory and was held captive, held prisoner for a number of years, you would think if anybody would be supportive of such an effort to rescue pilots, you would think it would be John McCain, but he is not. He is that selfish. He is that driven by other interests that he represents. Anyway, that's just my little criticism. I just had to get that out there.
And also share with the audience, we know we have people out there that we get charges that we're, you know, to be able to do what we do and not be arrested and knocked off and whatever. We must be a CIA front or something like that. And the answer to that is no, no, no. Actually, we have horrendous terms with the CIA, which is called, we don't even speak to them. They don't speak to us. We don't speak to them. We don't like their methods. We don't like their methods that they use on the American people, which they're not supposed to do in running psychological operations, which is not under their purview. But we've, whoops, I've got a tickle in my throat.
Oh, take your time, get a glass of water, whatever you have to do.
Yep. I've got one, but really one of the ways that we're able to get away with what we're doing is because we're valuable, and not so much that we're snitches, but people know that we're trustworthy. In terms of, they know we're loyal. I mean, we're anti-war because most of the wars are stupid wars, and they're done over money, and they're manipulated by rich people, and they're not even willing to share the wealth with the them. So that's a hustle. But we're very interested in national defense. But we think a lot of the stuff that's created is actually endangers the national defense, and folks know that's how we feel. So that when we're critics on policy, and we're really virulent critics, we don't get hit with the anti-American stick. And one of the ways, and the reason I'm sharing this with you now, is there were people that knew what we were trying to do over there, thought it was absolute folly. You know, there's no way that the Syrians would ever agree to do that after everything the U.S. has done to them. And, you know, we brought home the bacon. We tried to do it. We were successful. And then we had our legs cut out from under us. But they know there's a lot of people, or people in the Air Force know that we did that when maybe there was probably no one else will do it. And there's a number of situations where the VTE team has been involved in situations like this, a lot of them that we can't publish, and that's known in certain places. So they're not really able to, you know, we don't get arrested or threatened or we're going to close you down or any of that type of stuff, because they know when push comes to shove, we have a lot of friends, a lot of folks that would stand up for us. And we have been officially credited with stopping two false flag attacks that we got early information on, that we, some of them that we actually published, that we were looking for information on particular false flags that if folks gave to us, we would see got passed on to the right authorities. And we have done that. So that's, I share with the audience that, they give you a little background how we're able to do some of the stuff where we certainly have enemies. We certainly have people who hate us, and that includes in high places. But we also have friends there too. Now, the question is, how do we keep them?
you know how we keep them? We keep them by doing what we've been doing the way we've been doing it. And sure. Like you said, you know, the VT is trusted. And, you know, that's you don't give trust away, you earn it. And that's how you get there from here.
That's true.
I got one.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I've got a couple miscellaneous things, but I want to give you. I don't want to take over the show. I know you've got some things to talk about too.
No. This time is your time, Jim. I mean, okay. Go.
Well, I'm going to blow off some steam here, folks. I said this is a classic VT kind of a scream type of thing about how you're getting screwed by your government and part of this militarized Homeland Security and police force and how they love to find ways to justify a need for their services. What I was shocked to find out today, guess who's going out to arrest delinquent student loan people now that made the news?
U.S. federal marshals are going out as bill collectors.
And I do not mean like a guy with one car, you know, going up to just a regular Joe Schmo's house and knocking on the door, which would be cost effective. What am I about to say now, Mike?
Oh no, they're going all out, and they're going out with teams.
They go out with their team to knock on some guy's door and tell him that for his $1,500 due loan that he has not paid on and whatever, that he's under arrest. And of course, all they do is take him down to the courthouse. And he sees somebody and he has to sign that he's going to start a payment plan and whatever. So it's really an administrative function. But they are using highly paid U.S. Marshals. And folks, you want to talk about a good government job with nice benefits and often very interesting work. Sometimes they have lots of downtime. Can you imagine going out and rounding up delinquent student loan type guys? And you have lunch and you can drive around in your cars and you're all suited up. And think of the cost, what the taxpayers are spending. So these yo-yos, when all they have to do is make a phone call to these people. Hi, this is Jim Dean, the U.S. Marshal's Office. I've been assigned your case. And to save money, and rather than bring a team out there to bring you in, how about we just make an appointment for you to come down here and sign one of these little payment applications type deals? Which would you like to do? And folks, how many people do you think would choose option B?
All of them.
All of them.
And you know what they're setting themselves up to do? You're having these four U.S. marshals go up to some guy's door. It's going to be the wrong guy. And he's going to open fire and kill them all because they're expecting some guy, middle-aged guy with a paunch belly who's overweight, just owes a student loan. And boy, aren't they going to be surprised when they ring the wrong doorbell.
But, folks, this is a government abuse. I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal. So I'm going to do my little rant. Call your congressman. Tell them that if with all of the gangs we have in this country, that they never put more than 1% of the manpower that they need to on these gangs in these big cities. They've got these LA gang squads. California's got 100,000 gang members. It's 10 divisions. And they maybe have 5,000 gang policemen in the whole state. And then they're wasting, and I tell you, a carload, I wouldn't even think what the daily rate is of a carload of U.S. Marshals. Throwing that money away, they have other stuff that's backed up. They don't have enough manpower, and they're wasting it on these little student loans.
Well, Jim, the bankers want their money, and the government will do whatever it needs to please the bankers, okay?
Yeah.
Come on. Now, I got something I want to ask you about. The Greek Navy interdicted a shipment of 3,000 shotguns and 5,000 handguns, 20,000 rounds of ammunition that had left Turkey, was destined for Europe, so that Erdogan can arm the standing army that he's put in place in Europe. What's your opinion on this? What do you know about this?
Well, I've heard of that. When somebody told me the story, I thought they were referring to the 5,000 combat shotguns that were going to Libya. which Gordon had told me about a while back. And of course, the framing for that is he said they were very, very nice shotguns. And he says, I think 5,000 is, I says, I think the Marines don't have 5,000 combat shotguns and their whole armament. So he was just wondering who in the hell, you know, what were they going to do with those? Because they're really close end type work. And, you know, why would the AK-47 guys, I can't see them putting their AK-47 down and picking up a combat shotgun.
Well, there are no weapons in Europe. The only people who have weapons in Europe are law enforcement and the military. The population has been disarmed. Yep. So whenever you're in a major European city and you've got shotguns and the population doesn't, you've got a very vulnerable population out there. And
sure do.
And that's what's going on. And this is just one shipment that was interdicted by the Greeks. And good job to the Greek Navy for their success in doing that. How many other shipments have slipped through? How well armed are not the true refugees, but the military force that Erdogan has already placed inside of Europe? And that makes me think that may be one of the levers that Erdogan's using over Merkel.
Yeah, we have to wonder... I'm hoping that some of our German friends, I mean, they're just focused. Gordon tells me that the German people there, they hate Merkel, that she's kept it out of the newspapers. It hasn't gotten over here. But for what's happened to the country, they blame all that on her. And, you know, I mean, it'll be one hell of a surprise if her party comes in strong in the local elections.
Well, in unless they hire the George W. Bush consultants and get them to flip the electronic voting machines.
There you go.
You know that don't rule it out. It could happen in Germany too. They're not immune to any of this monkey business, no more than the American people are.
Amen. And I was going to finish out the show. I'm going to go to Ukraine and our little team up there, Jeffrey Silverman, our bureau chief, and Henry Commons, are in there still into the Luger Lab swine flu bioweapons lab up there, up to their eyeballs. The Russian TV crew has been there, I think, for almost a week. The swine flu has spread. We've reported that it leaked out of the Georgia lab. The people in the lab came down with it. Shoddy design, even though the lab, the $30 million lab, came in at $100 million, the typical way far away overseas contractor type scam. Ukraine claims they've got 300 dead, and we hear that that's actually 1,000. The hospitals in Georgia are full, and it's spread to Russia. And we've gotten reports that Turkey has bought it. They've already let it out in the Turkish, Kurdish areas, and they're going to plan to spread it into Syria. So we have a NATO partner actually using a biological weapon. And we still have not been able to get any mass media news on this. This is several years we've been on this story. We don't know any major paper that's actually picked it up. Jeffrey Silverman, Henry Commons, on the tip of the spear, old-fashioned investigative reporters. He's been beat up a lot. He's worked with journalists that have been murdered there. They've really got some mafias there. Prosecutors get murdered. Politicians get murdered. When people feel they're criminals, that they're being threatened, and they would rather kill somebody to try to end it.
Let me interject something here, because when you talk about mafias, let me be very, very clear. In Ukraine, the mafia is the Khazarian mafia. It is Jewish. It is not Russian. Don't mistake this. This is who the mafia is in Ukraine. I've been there. I've been there on numerous times. I know this very well firsthand. This is the Khazarian mafia. This is who these guys are.
And the oligarchs are not Eskimos. I want to put that rumor to bed. you know.
No, they're not. They too are they're all Khazarian. This is what the Russian population, the Russian ethnic population of Ukraine, lives in abject poverty, while these oligarchs live like kings. It's really, really sad, and it is a great imbalance that needs to be rectified.
The Russians had done a story on this a couple years ago. They had sent a TV crew in. That has helped keep our people alive there because they're high profile, and if something did happen to them, there would be much more aggressive investigations than some unknown person. But we're lucky to have folks like this. And, of course, one of the things we've been trying to still break is we feel that they had the before they moved some of the original U.S. people out of there, that some of the sarin that was made, that was originally used in Syria, was made there and then shipped through Turkey on the way down, that you have not only weapons smuggling, but now you're talking chemical weapons, you're talking biological weapons, U.S. TOW missiles being transshipped through Georgia. It's really an underground sewer that the American people are paying for that they know nothing about.
And that our government has created. Hey, Jim, we're out of time for the hour. If you want to stick on longer, you're most welcome. But if you got to go, you got to go. Love to have you.
I got to get back. And what I'll try to do is come on once a week so we can have fun doing a tightly packed show like this. It was a lot of fun.
Very good, sir. Thank you so much. And folks, we'll be right back after the short break. Stick with us. We're going to be taking callers after this. So you'd be ready. Well, good evening. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com. Also broadcasting on www.freedomslips.com, Studio B Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 16, 2016. And this hour, I'm going to be taking guests, callers. So let me give out the dial-in number. It's 310-421-4053. So we've got a whole hour ahead of us here, folks. So any commentary you have on anything you heard from Jim or anything you want to talk about, just feel free to call in. Again, the dial-in number is 310-421-4053. And I always say, grab a pen, grab some paper, write it down. So take 5 seconds. I'll give you that long. I'm going to say it again. Grab paper. The number is 310-421-4053. Anyway, many of you may be wondering what I was doing in Georgia. We could go visit Jim Dean. Well, he was not the primary event. He was the secondary event. I know many of you have listened to me when I've had Dan Winter on several times, and Dan Winter has been talking about this negentropic conjugated plasma field device that he has been building. Well, I got invited to go preview it and to take it for a test drive, so to speak. So I was down there for about 5 days. I had 5 5-minute sessions in it per day. And we'll see how the results of this work out. It is something like I've not seen before. It's certainly very fascinating. And I'm going to hold my commentary on it and see if I can get Dan on in the next week or so to talk about this some more. Because it is real. It does exist. I've seen it. I've sat in it. Turned it on. I felt the effects of it. Okay? You know, some of these things that people talk about on the radio shows, you never see anything. They never produce anything that works. This is real. This is something you can look at, you can see, you can feel. Whenever you're in the field, you can feel it. Like I said, I had 5 5-minute sessions. And for 3 of those 5-minute sessions, I would sit in this field. And from my perception, maybe 10 seconds had went by. But they told me that 5 minutes went by. I didn't believe them. But I had independent sources there, you know, observing. And like I said, it seemed like 10 seconds. So there is, at least in me, there is a time dilation effect for being in this bioenergetic type field. We've got our first caller, 781. Welcome to the show.
Well, Mike, Cliff from Maine.
Hey, Cliff from Maine. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good.
Yes?
Good. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm concerned about the Scalia thing. I heard the initial reports, and I listened to the Hagman, I believe it was, that said that Scalia was staying in an 11,000-foot suite.
That's a big suite.
I mean to say, and if there's 40 of them there, and Scalia was a guest of an invitee, this is a massive place. And I would very much like to know who Scalia's friend was that got the invitation that took Scalia as a friend. I'm thinking it might have been Cheney.
Well, I don't look at Cheney. I kind of, you know, Scalia, 79-year-old man, a heart attack is not out of the question. However, his family has come out and said he was perfectly healthy, had no history of heart disease. Something that's fishy is going on. If you look at the math here, Obama has had 8 years in office, or I'm sorry, 7 years plus in office, and he's running out of time if he wants to put an impression on the Supreme Court. You know, is it possible that Scalia was liquidated in order to create an opportunity for Obama to appoint someone to the Supreme Court who would take it into a liberal direction away from the John Roberts direction that Bush put in place there? Any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I think you're looking at who benefits here, but I'm looking at history. And back in 2003, Scalia was a justice who was over here in the Halliburton case about when Cheney had that secret meeting with the Oil Energy Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And they were subpoenaing records. And Cheney took them down off the Louisiana coast to go shoot ducks. They were in duck blinds and probably another place like this, 11,000 goddamn square feet. That's a bedroom. But back then, Scalia refused to recuse himself from the case. And that case was, and that whole energy deal went through under the Bush administration back in 2003. I've never trusted the man since.
Oh, I don't trust any of them. Gordon and I went. Remember, Gordon was entertaining the idea of running for president of the U.S. He said the first thing he'd do would be arrest the Supreme Court. for their crimes against the people of this country.
Well, I don't think it was Gordon that was entertaining. I think it was Webb there that was pushing it.
Please don't bring up that person's name. He doesn't exist.
All right, then, bro.
All right, okay.
Then. But that back to this Scalia thing, the fact that they pronounced him dead over the telephone, they get a 5,000-foot airstrip on the property in an airport in the nearby town, and they drove him in the back of a truck for 3.5 hours to get him to a coroner. They went right through the town where that judge that gave that permission was. They could have...
We've just been joined by another caller, so go ahead and make your point, and we'll get on to the other caller in a minute here, but go ahead and make your point.
Well, the ambulance that was carrying the judge's body through the town that the Cinderella judge gave permission to call him dead, and they brought him to El Paso, and they never even stopped to let the judge look at his Anthony Cinderella, and he's dead. They just drove right through. This stinks. It stinks to high heaven.
Well, it does. And it's probably one of these things we're never going to get to the bottom of, but it doesn't mean that a lot of us aren't going to try. All right, any other comments before I let you go and welcome our other caller?
I will say one thing. Back in 1963-64, Alan Shepard, John Glenn, orbited the Earth. I mailed a newspaper into a room that I was building with my father, and my father told me right then and there, when Kennedy died, you will never hear what happened to Kennedy for at least 50 years, and they're going by, and I still haven't heard. All right, Mike, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you so much for the call. Really appreciate it. Our next caller, area code 281, welcome to the show. Who do we have here?
Hi, Mike. This is Doug in Houston.
Hey, Doug in Houston. How are you? Welcome.
Not too bad. I was just listening to the other caller from Maine talking about Scalia. And are you familiar with a website called Covert Geopolitics?
No, I am not.
Okay. Reason why I like the site is that they have, under geopolitics, they have their own Ben Fulford updates. So that's where I get a lot of my my Fulford updates from, this website, because if you go to Fulford's site right now, his latest newsletter is missing, and it's been missing since really Sunday when it was first posted.
Well, you know, I get my Fulford updates from Colin Fulford. I get him on the phone.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, but I haven't talked to him. I just got back in town yesterday evening, so I haven't spoken to him in a week or so. So, mm-hmm. But I will give him a call, let him know that his site is down. He needs to tend to it.
Yeah, it's. I was wondering if it was just a mistake, but
let me share something with you. The VT site has been hacked and brought down.
I noticed it today, Mike. The last 2 days, it's been slow, and I say, is this just traffic or is this a DOS attack?
No, it's under attack. It's been down. It's been just awful to work with. If you could get it to work at all, it's been just terrible, because mm-hmm. we're breaking these stories coming out of Syria about what mm-hmm. Turkey and Saudi Arabia are doing, and mm-hmm. They don't want this out there. Ergo, mm-hmm. The VT sites getting hammered, just like the Fulford site gets hammered. You know, I mean, anybody who is out there telling the truth mm-hmm. Has to tolerate and live with these attacks by the bad guys, and the bad guys got more money than God. They mm-hmm. create money out of air, okay, out of nothing, out of black screen computers. They can make as much money as they want. And they hire people to go out and suppress the truth. And that's what's going mm-hmm. on.
Mm-hmm.
So what else do you know?
Okay, so what I guess that explains what I'm seeing at Fulford. Well, back to Scalia and this article off of Geopolitics. And it's been talked about quite a bit on Zero Hedge. And I think the most interesting aspect about the Scalia thing is to look who is the host, who's the owner of the ranch he stayed at, John Poindexter.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Former admiral, former NSA guy. And you're just like going, okay, is he a good guy or is he a bad guy? You know, what's going on here? Is he a white hat? There's something there. You know, we got a major spook here who owns a 30,000-acre, ranch out there in West Texas.
Well, but here's the issue. You want to know he's a white hat or a good hat? You just answered your own question. I don't mm-hmm. care if you're a G-19 or a G-20 and you mm-hmm. work in the government since you're 18 years old until you retire at 65. You don't mm-hmm. make enough money working for the government to buy yourself a 30,000-acre ranch. I don't care if you're buying it for $100 an acre.
Mm-hmm.
You don't make enough money on a government salary, period, end of discussion. So you got mm-hmm. your answer as to who Poindexter is. The evidence of the lifestyle in the opulent lifestyle that a 30,000-acre ranch goes with should tell you that mm-hmm. this guy is not a good guy. He's not on the right
that's,
guy. Let me give you an example. This last trip to Syria that I made with Gordon and Jim Dean and the other VT guys, mm-hmm. we were all flying economy. We were flying mm-hmm. coach. Mm-hmm. I had a 9-hour layover in Dubai to save $200 on the ticket, okay? Mm-hmm. Those are the type of tickets that we travel on, all right? The cheapest fare available, because we don't have big sponsors. And mm-hmm. the joke was that once we all rendezvoused in Damascus, the joke was, if we were working for the bad guys, we'd all be flying over here on a Gulfstream 5.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we're not. We don't. we take the circuitous route. We take the cheapest airfare. We put up with layovers. We fly economy, and we're all big guys. I mean, you know, Gordon last trip over there, he's probably 280 pounds. You know, Jim Hankey, if you see him, he's 6'5". And we're right. sitting in the economy seats that are made for a 5'5", you know, 108-pound Chinese woman.
Oh yeah, I understand that. I've flown that way myself, and I'm not really, you know, I'm 5'11". I'm not that tall, but boy, I tell you, you're talking about cramped.
That's how it is. You can't get comfortable. It's a 22-hour flight plus layovers, and so mm-hmm. but the bad guys. They get to take a Gulfstream 5 over there with shrimp and you know, vodka martinis, stirred, shaken, not stirred. You know, mm-hmm. we're in the back of the bus traveling on a steerage. You know, right. so that should tell you everything you know about Poindexter.
I was concluding that he's pretty much a bush guy. Whenever you see
government officials who mm-hmm. once they retire. Are living mm-hmm. Not merely a millionaire lifestyle, but a $500 million lifestyle or $1 billion lifestyle.
Right.
Then you know mm-hmm. that these guys have sold out.
They're getting payoffs. You know,
yeah.
For their...
They're mm-hmm. not just getting payoffs; they're getting big payoffs. Yeah, and mm-hmm. you said it yourself. Here is a guy who's a spook, not just a spook, but a top level spook, former
actor. Yeah, super super spook.
Yeah, and you know, this is how you have to start evaluating these people. If mm-hmm. a guy, you know, like I said, if he was a G19 or a G20, that's as high as the pay scale goes. They're making good money, but they're not making good enough money to buy a 30,000-acre ranch in Texas.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So that's just an indicator. I mean, use these things. I mean, folks, learn discernment. Learn mm-hmm. that, you know, to connect these dots. I mean, you know, if he was an admiral, he was a career guy in the Navy. And then mm-hmm. he goes over into the intelligence agencies. Okay, mm-hmm. fine. Maybe he gets two pensions. Still, two pensions may get you 300 acres. It's not going to get you 30,000.
Well, he was actually DARPA at one time. You're talking about high-level spook type. I had another thought. So I guess I'm just kind of concluding that whatever you think about Scalia, and for me, I think he was just more neocon for my taste and, you know, probably borderline fascist in terms of civil liberties and all that, a little too conservative for my taste. That possibly he was, they were getting uncomfortable with him, and they sensed that he was about to whistleblow or something like that. You know, why else take him out?
Yeah, I just see him as being one of the better conservative minds on the Supreme Court, and
okay.
I see him even if he wrote dissenting opinions and was overwritten, his dissenting opinions would be powerful. Mm-hmm. And I look at this and I say to myself, okay, Obama has not been able to appoint a justice yet. He would certainly like to do so, and the clock is ticking. He's the clock's running down. I'm just saying entertain that as a possibility. This is pure conjecture on my part.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're saying your overall opinion of Scalia was more good than bad?
You know, like I said, you know, my view of the world has changed so much since I was a Republican. Mm-hmm. It's not funny. You know, I do still believe in conservative principles, but I see mm-hmm. how what we used to call conservatives are now neo-Bolsheviks. And
yes.
it's mm-hmm. it's changing. And so I have to rethink everything. Like I said, mm-hmm. I'm not an Obama fan, but I do support Obama. Because he is the president. He is allegedly the commander in chief, the role that John McCain is trying to usurp from him right now. But, mm-hmm. Whether he was properly elected, I don't know about this birth certificate stuff. There's still questions there that have not been answered to my satisfaction yet. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think this whole government is bought and paid for. And I look at, do you know who the biggest contributor is to both the Democrat and Republican Party is?
Sheldon Adelson.
No, Goldman Sachs.
Oh, okay.
Goldman Sachs. You know,
that's I'm just referring to Gordon. You know,
my
talked about his keynote speech in Syria, where he mentioned how Sheldon Adelson had purchased both sides of Congress for $1 billion.
Yeah, that's exactly what was done. That was a plan that Newt Gingrich put together back in the 80s, saying, look, for $300 million, we can buy every race in this country. And that's exactly what they did.
So you think he got that money from Goldman?
I have no idea. But I know Goldman Sachs is the largest contributor to both political parties. Hey, Doug, I got to keep it moving. I got other callers waiting in line. But thank you so much for your call. I do appreciate it. And let's welcome our caller from 303 Colorado. Welcome.
Thank you. This is Brian.
Hey, Brian. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me. I was listening to the show called Incendiary Radio on RBN with Robert Ravolt the other night, and he was researching the matter of Poindexter. And so at first he thought it was the John Poindexter of Iran-Contra infame, the national security advisor from way back. And then he got to researching this on his show and established that that was not the John Poindexter that was the subject of...
So it's a different John Poindexter then. So there's... my name is Mike Harris. There's half a dozen Mike Harrises out there. One was a premier of Canada. I can see the confusion.
There's a few of me, too. So I was a little disappointed, actually. I wanted a smoking gun.
I understand. I understand. Well, that point of clarity is very, very valuable. I hope everybody pays attention because, like I said, there's more than one Mike Harris out there. It's possible there's more than one John Poindexter, who is not the the national security advisor during Iran-Contra.
Well, these guys had different middle initials. Forget what they were.
Okay.
And let's see. The next subject, I'll keep it brief. It was a matter of a debate the other day in which the Bushes took a terrible hit in that. I've never seen anything like this happen so publicly. And I never would have imagined it months ago for it to be coming from a major New York businessman. But I'm not sure if you're aware that Trump tore into Jeb Bush over the matter of his brother lying about weapons of mass destruction. And went into quite the rant over this and was immensely successful. Bush called him a bully. he tried desperately to defend his family, talked about how strong his mother was. Trump said she should be running. And it was really sweet how it came out in the polls with him almost at the absolute bottom of the pack.
Well, so the bottom line is Trump cut Jeb's nuts off in public. That's the thing of beauty, folks. We cannot have another Bush or another Clinton in the White House. Plain and simple. Both of those alternatives are unacceptable. You look at the wreckage that the Clintons and the Bushes have left this country in. It's immense. And, Obama did not create these problems. He inherited them from his predecessors. And, I can't say he's done a great job, but he hasn't done a terrible job either. And so, I'm gonna give him a passing grade of a C. He's no A, but he's not an F. George Bush was an F. Clinton was an F. These were failures as presidents. But Obama's got a passing grade at a C right now, which is the best that we've seen in a long time.
Okay.
I am not an Obama fan. Trust me on this. I am not an Obama fan, but it's kind of like, this country has got an infection, and Obama's like the physician trying not to kill the patient. How much of the cancer do you cut out before you kill the patient? That's kind of how it is, and he's trying to keep the patient, this country alive. But it was in such bad shape after the malmanagement of Clinton and Bush before him that how did he manage to do this? And like I said, I give him a passing grade. not, he's certainly not an A or a B, but he's not an F either. So
I think if he were to strive for a B, he would perhaps not be alive right now.
Well, you know, if he wanted to win some points, one of the things he could do is say, you know what, let's look at this Obamacare thing. We got a pass, but you know what? It may not be the right fit for the country. Let's reevaluate this, and let's take the let's not let the insurance companies and the drug companies write the law next time. Let's let the doctors and the physicians write the law this time. Let's let the hospital administrators write the law. Let's do something that's going to benefit people, not something that's going to make shareholders wealthy for the insurance companies and the pharma companies.
Let me make one final comment about Bush.
Okay.
And my challenge to humanity is how can we build on this and take down this family permanently? I just wonder if it might be timely for Trump to talk about the cocaine load that the Bush brothers got caught with.
I think it would be timely on that. And if we were the bad guys, we just walk up behind them and put a bullet in their head. But we're not the bad guys. And we're handicapped by our own rules of law that the bad guys take advantage of. You know, they don't bother with due process. We do. But I would welcome Trump to go ahead and start challenging all of these things. Challenge him on 9/11 as well. Let's get this stuff out in the open. It's time to clean house. It's time to find out what the real truth is here.
True enough. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Brian, thanks for the call. Our next caller is 781. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Mike. It's Cliff from Maine again.
Hey, Cliff. I tell you what, Cliff, I got other callers waiting. I can't take you twice. Sorry, brother. Just can't do it. But thank you so much for calling.
I just wanted to correct you. So Obama has elected two Supreme Justices, Sotomayor and
You know what? You're right. I misspoke. I forgot all about Sotomayor.
I'm all done. I'm going back to the computer, bro. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, sir. Okay, we've got 281. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Mike. This is Cheryl from Houston.
Hi, Cheryl from Houston.
We're not the bad guys. We're handicapped by our own
We got somebody else. Brett, can you drop that call? It's talking over the radio. There we go. Okay. No.
Okay, I'm just wondering why no one ever seems to recall that poor Martha Stewart, who lied to the federal government about a insider trading job on a stock, ended up in jail, and this bastard Hillary doesn't get anything along the same line, number one. And number two is, I am so sick and tired of hearing about white guilt and why we whites voted in Obama, when the real reason is nobody wanted John Insane McCain to be president.
Well, that's absolutely true. McCain was not an acceptable candidate. That was a mistake of the Republican Party to put him up there. You are absolutely correct. And I tell you what, I had a woman, I was flying this, I was at the airport. I was talking to one of these feminazis who is a rabid Hillary fan. And she said, well, who are you looking at? And I said, well, on the Democrat side, I can't vote for Hillary. That only leaves Bernie, and Bernie's a socialist, but he's better than Hillary. And, you know, she accepted that. That was okay. She said, well, who do you like on the Republican side? I said, well, you know, I look at the race. There's only one man out there, and the rest are midgets. And she goes, who's that? I said, well, Trump's the only one who's the man. The rest are a bunch of midgets. She came unglued on me. I can't believe you said that. I've lost all respect for you, that you would consider voting for Trump. Anyway, I didn't say that. I just said he's a man among midgets. You want to hang on over the break?
Yeah, okay, Mike.
Okay, great. We'll be right back, folks. Stick with us. We'll be right back after this short break. Well, good evening and welcome back. This is Mike Harris, broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com, as well as www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 16th, 2016. We're taking callers today. The dial-in number, grab your pen, grab your paper, 310-421-4053, and let's welcome our caller back. Welcome back with Cheryl, right?
Yes, sir. How are you? I just wanted to know how old was the lady that you talked to that was so offended at your comment? What age would you say?
I'm going to guess 60 plus, probably somewhere
really?
Between 58 and 63.
Wow.
Yes.
What bothers me is she was white,
tall, not unattractive, blonde hair, blue eyes, very, very white. And she gave me a lecture about white privilege, too. I couldn't believe it. I'm getting lectured about white privilege. Are you kidding me?
Really? Well, what bothers me is that all of these young women who think that they want to support Hillary because she's a woman, they have no recollection of the history of what Hillary has been all about. And they just think because she's got, you know, boobs, that she should be president. It just ticks me off to no end. So I'm surprised to hear that the person you talked to was of my age group.
Well, she was hostile, and it shows the liberal flaw. You know, liberals could go off on any tangent, that no matter how objectionable it may be, and we're polite. We listen to them, we entertain them, we can respectfully dismiss, because I said, I don't know, I might support Trump. She was on me. I mean, like vicious personal attacks. I mean, I can't believe how stupid you are. As I've got a way high IQ. I'm well stupid. Don't tell me I'm uneducated because I disagree with you. This was, she got up and huffed and walked away. Just naked.
I don't understand what's going on in this country.
I was being somewhat accommodating because.
I think there's a disparity in this country because we're so homogenized with multiculturalism that we're never going to agree on anything, ever, ever, ever. So, you know, unlike when our so-called founding fathers, which I'm so sick of that phrase, were, you know, European origin, let's say, and now there's so many cultures in this country. They don't even speak the same language. They don't have the same religion.
Well,
they don't have anything in common. And yet we're all supposed to agree on how we're going to fix things in this country. It's not going to happen.
Well, let me say this about that. All of these liberals and all of these minorities, they forgot who brought them to the dance. You know, if it wasn't for white Europeans, this country would look just like Mexico.
That's it.
I mean, you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yeah,
I mean,
it is.
It's white Europeans that created this. And, you know, these are the people who did it. And the rest of you, let us do what we know how to do.
Mike, your mic is cutting out.
Because, okay, it is. Well, the guest microphone's cutting out as well. I don't know how to fix that. Anyway, I'm sorry if I'm cutting out, folks. That just happens. I've got good connection here. I've got good contact. Everything should be working. But it wasn't. I don't want to disparage the Negroes because they've had a tough time. They were brought here as slaves, and they've been exploited, and they've been abused. The welfare system, the drug issue, all that. But they didn't create this country. White Europeans did. These illegal invaders from south of the border coming up here, all the Hispanics who everybody's trying to make so important, they didn't create this country. They're leaving their shithole of a country called Mexico that is a basket case run by the drug cartels to come up here to hide behind us. They don't have the testicular fortitude to stay down there and reform their own country and change it into something where they would want to live. They want to come up here and display.
They're probably powerless to do that, just like we are to change anything in this country.
We can write, in fact, our
damn so-called representatives, and it gets us nowhere.
Well, here's the deal. If all 55 million illegal Hispanics would go back to Mexico from this country, they could change it overnight, because that's a force to be reckoned with when you have 55 million people.
Well, they can also work for Carrier and Ford. I mean, all of these companies that are moving down to Mexico, they should be delighted to move back to their own country. So why aren't they? Because we keep giving them welfare. That's why. We keep giving them welfare. And as long as we keep opening our purses and screwing ourselves, it's never going to change.
Well, you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. I don't think any illegal person should be allowed to collect a dime off the American taxpayer. And you know what? We don't need a wall. That this whole wall controversy is a bunch of BS. It, you know what we need? We need to enforce the laws we have on the books. And
what
we need
we
to go
need
out
is,
and
what we need is drones over and, the Mexican border. I mean, how difficult
now,
let
the host talk. Let the host talk. You know, you don't cut me off, okay? Let me talk. I was making a point. The point is that we have laws on the books that demand that if you hire an illegal alien, it's a $10,000 fine for each one you hire, and it's 6 months in prison for each one you hire. So let's go out and pick up the board of directors. Don't interrupt. Let me finish my point. If we go out and pick up the board of directors in the top 50 managers for Tyson Foods or Marriott Corporation and put them in jail and make this very public and fine their company $10,000 per illegal alien. And if they've got 8,000 of them there, that's a big fine. Let's let their shareholders deal with that and fire all those guys. And then let's watch the pink slips go out the next day across this nation. They'll have to go home. Now, your turn. You've got the floor.
No, I totally agree with you, Mike. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just suggesting the same thing, but nobody enforces it. So what have we got? You know, they're telling the Border Patrol not to hold anybody in detention. It's just incredible. It's just absolutely incredible.
Well, the thing is, the most of the people that I know feel like I feel about this. And it's time we have a new government. We need new management in this country. I'll say it again. We have been malmanaged since the murder of JFK, and it's time to undo this. It's time to take some responsibility here and say, hey, look, this happened on our watch, and I'm done with this. This isn't going to happen anymore. And I need to get a bigger microphone. I need to reach another 100 million people with this type of message, and this will take off. That's why they're so afraid of me. That's why they're so afraid of VTs, because we tell the truth, and we tell the truth as everyone has experienced it, and everyone knows it. We don't believe the BS that comes out of the mainstream media. Anyway, I have to thank you, because you got me worked up as the host. This is a hot button for me.
Hey, I got a little trivia thing to share with you. Do you know that on November 22nd, 1963, that in addition to JFK, C.S. Lewis and Aldous Huxley died on the same day?
I did not.
Well, now you know.
So what significance do you place on that?
Huh?
What significance do you place on that? Aldous Huxley wrote Brave New World.
I'm just saying that, Aldous Huxley and C.S. Lewis were, so-called, well-regarded people of the book, if you will, and nobody ever knew that, and they died on the same day. I'm just saying.
Anytime I hear something like that, I remember that scene out of the Godfather movie, where Don Corleone is making his move against his enemies. He didn't kill a half a dozen to make sure all the opposition was taken care of. Now, I could see a guy like Aldous Huxley writing a book like Brave New World. They were probably scared to death what he's going to write next. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just pontificating here a bit. That's all. And I want to thank the earlier caller, Nick, who pointed out that I missed one, that Obama has made Supreme Court appointments. If I make mistakes, folks, I own them. I made a mistake on that. I forgot all about that ugly toad, Sotomayor.
Thank you, Mike. I love you.
Oh, thanks. I love you too. You're a darling. Call back anytime.
Okay, sir. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Anyway, the lines are open. Number is 310-421-4053. We appreciate anybody else who who can or wants to call in. But no, really, that caller, Nick, from Maine, I do have to own it. Like I said, when I make an oversight or I make a mistake, no excuses. I forgot all about Sotomayor. And, you know, that surprised me. And what I hear with Scalia dead, it has been already suggested to me that Obama is going to appoint Loretta Lynch as the replacement for Scalia, which means we're going to have more color on the on the bench that I think is warranted. That's another minority appointment there, another woman minority appointment. So it's taking the direction of this whole politically correct crowd where men don't count, white men in particularly don't count. We're overlooked, we're underappreciated, but we are the ones who created this country. Not directly myself, but my ancestors were did. My family's lived in this country 12 generations. And these are the people who did it. And it's because of my people, because of my my forebears, my ancestors, that this country exists in some small way. They had an influence. You know, it's time that why are white Europeans, and particularly white male Europeans, so disparaged and so put down? Whenever the minority communities couldn't live the way they're living without what we've created, they wouldn't be able to enjoy this quality of life. And like I said, if you don't believe me, look at Mexico. They had a different founding. It was different. They didn't do things the way that happened in our country here, or you know, just didn't. And you can see the results yourself. Everybody wants to come to the USA. Why? Because this is the best place on earth. Why? It's because of white European men who, and women who built this country. It wasn't the Negroes were not in an authority position to make strategic decisions, and you know, I'm sorry, but they were brought here against their will. They were treated as slaves, and that is inexcusable. But that happened a long time ago, and I've never owned a slave. Nobody alive has ever owned a slave, and no one who is alive was in this country then. That just hasn't happened. That is something of the past. And it's time for, I would like to see Black America pick up their game. I really would. You know, I want to see them successful. I want to see them thrive. I want to see them, you know, prosper in every possible way. But we really need to rethink it. It keeps people impoverished. It doesn't give them an incentive to work. You know, the Mexicans come up here, and they'll go out and work. They'll work for cash under the table, and they'll lie to get the welfare. You know, Mamacita will say that, no, I'm not married. My husband left me. I've got all these little niños here, little kids. And, you know, she may have four kids, but she'll borrow four more from her neighbor and go down there and collect benefits for nine people. Meanwhile, the husband's living in the house, working under the table, bringing cash in, you know, displacing an American from that job. The net effect of this is that this illegal labor that comes into the country, it drains the welfare system. It burdens the government at every level, whether it's the hospital, the schools, the prison. It burdens the government, so there's never enough money to cover the bills. And it displaces Americans from doing their work, and particularly our most vulnerable Americans. It puts downward wage pressure on everybody's wages. I don't care if you're a CEO. I don't care if you're middle management. I don't care if you're a line worker on a factory, not that we have any left. It puts wage pressure in a downward direction on the American people, and we need to stop this endless incoming supply of this illegal foreign labor. It needs to stop. It needs to go back. Our politicians have sold us out. You know, this is America. It should be for Americans. You know, we cannot support the poor of the planet because they want a better life. The better life they want belongs to you. And they're part of the reason that the middle class is being doesn't exist, because there is no upward pressure on wages. There have been two things that have a number of things that have destroyed the middle class, but the two things that are putting pressure why wages aren't rising as fast as prices are is the influx of illegal labor. That's a big one. And the other one is the outflow of our jobs to overseas. And, you know, like I said, it's malmanagement. It's just bad, bad management. All right, our caller, 605, welcome to the show. Who are we talking to?
This is Tim out in South Dakota. I don't know if you got my email.
Hey, Jim, welcome.
Did you get our email I sent you a little bit when the show was starting about what's going on out here?
This is the one about the drug cartels operating on the Indian reservation. The Mexican mafia is on the Indian reservation.
Right.
The feds are preparing to send the Syrians.
Yeah, they're
yes,
getting
I got
ready
that.
To. Okay, so we just found that out this weekend. We had a prominent South Dakota individual, a good friend, call on yesterday afternoon and tell me about it. She'd had dinner with one of the guys who's bidding on the contract to build this new town out there that holds between 2,000 and 3,000 of them. And I just got to thinking, all the problems they're having out there right now in South Dakota, here in on the reservation and stuff, and they said that everybody's armed at the teeth, and the Mexicans and the Indians do not get along. And now they got the Syrians coming in out there. And I just wonder if the feds aren't doing this to get around the states.
Well, that would certainly be a logical choice, but don't they have to have the consent of the tribes in order to do this?
Yeah, it kind of sounds like they do, because they're using minority contractors. These people are using minority contractors to get this done. That's what I was told.
Well, this whole thing about set-asides and affirmative action just really just it makes my blood boil. It should be the best quality for the, and I don't like the low bidder always getting the contract. I want the best value for the dollar, you know, because I don't want to spend money to buy the lowest bidder when he's selling a piece of junk with you know, a shoddy manufacturing or shoddy construction that falls apart in half the time it should. I want the best value for the buck. We need to rethink this process that we're going in. Everything in our government needs to be reevaluated. Everything.
Yeah, I agree. I just wonder, though, Mike, if this isn't a way to bring in people like that are coming into Europe and getting them in here and setting them up here to create all kinds of havoc here in the country.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm scared to death for Europe right now. I truly am. I mean, I look at what the opportunity to infiltrate Europe with essentially a military force that's currently unarmed, and the seizure of these shipment of shotguns into, you know, by the Greek Navy, bound for Europe. That is terrifying for me. That they might arm, you know, Islamic militants and set them loose in European cities just to slaughter the indigenous European population. That is terrifying for me.
Yeah, I have some friends in Germany that told me that they're really scared. So,
well, and you look at the Mexican mafia and MS-13, and these guys are armed to the teeth. You know, We don't. There's not enough police out there to stop these guys. You know, Jim Dean said there's 100,000 you know, gang members in L.A. alone. I think it's probably three times that. But you know, Los Angeles, they've got three squad cars per 200,000 people. You realize? That's all it is. Three squad cars for 200,000 people. And it's not a thin blue line. It's a skinny, skinny blue line these days. And if they decide to get fractious, and I've said this for a long time, that MS-13 is a military organization that's using the sale of drugs and other racketeering efforts to fund their eventual takeover of this country. That's what I look at it as.
Well, I had I visited with a guy who for 26 years was a warden in one of the penitentiaries out in California, and he told me that the Mexican mafia is the most feared group of all of them. He said all of the other groups, MS-13, all the motorcycle gangs and everything, pay a tithe to them. And he said that they have moved their headquarters up into Colorado Springs, and they have a minimum of 50,000 foot soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they're in the reservations here. They said that they're making the math right out in the open now, and nobody is doing a thing. People are just terrified.
Well, you know, the answer to that is let's decriminalize drugs, let's take the profit motive out of it, and let's make the drugs that are truly harmful to human life. Methamphetamine, heroin come to mind right away. And let's make the drugs that really ruin human life, let's make those death penalty for even simple possession. And let's end the problem. But things like marijuana or LSD or who knows what else. I don't even know what drugs are out there anymore. But, mushrooms, this kind of, make those things, decriminalize all this nonsense, like Oregon has and Washington State and Colorado and others. Let's change it. Let's do what Portugal did. And you watch drug usage fall 75%. You watch prices fall 90%. And you watch death from drug overdoses fall 90%. Pretty interesting how that works.
Yeah, I guess my biggest concern though is when you got two forces like the Mexican mafia, and then they're bringing in these Syrians and stuff. Are the Mexican mafia going to be providing the arms for these people?
I don't know, but I don't think that the Syrian people, unless they've been pre-screened, it's like, see, like I said, I've been to Syria twice. The Syrian people couldn't be nicer to me. I mean, they are very, very, a very gentle people. They're, the guy's got a wife, he's got kids, he wants to have a nice house, be secure, wants his kids to do better than he did. That's what I see out of the typical guy over there. I don't see any grandiose visions of world conquest or coming here to create terrorism or stuff. They just want to be left alone. You look at this ISIS problem. That's a bunch of mercenaries that have been hired by Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and the CIA to go in there and create the a threat to steal oil and to topple the Assad regime. That's what they were put there for. Assad's extremely popular. He won 86% of the vote. Jim Dean was there as an election monitor, an observer, and he said it was absolutely a clean election. Jim Dean was one of a couple hundred people who went there to observe the election, and I trust Jim Dean. I believe every word he says. That is a man of honor and integrity. If he says it was a clean election, by golly, it was clean.
Yeah, I believe that. But my question is, Mike, who are these people really that they're bringing in here? That they're flying them in on UPS planes and other ways. Who are these people? And how can we afford them with the kind of money
to
shape the countries in and everything? That's the thing that scares people.
We can't afford them. If these were truly refugees, it would be one thing. But I think we may be bringing this may be the ISIS relief valve to get their foot soldiers out of there that have been fighting this war against the Syrian government for all this time.
So what are they going to do? They going to bring the war over here? That's what concerns me.
They probably. Well, the thing is, they probably want to because we haven't had a good war since 1865. And war is where the money is, brother.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
I mean, war is where the money is. The war profiteers get rich off this, and they want the whole planet to be engulfed in fighting every place. They want everybody scrambling for everything and make them richer faster than they're already getting rich. I don't know what else they want. It just doesn't make sense to me.
No, and I agree with you. And I'm a pacifist myself, and it's just and I've worked with veterans and stuff for years, and it's just disgusting how they're being treated over here. I know my nephew got back from Hawaii. He's been there 4 years. He came to visit over Christmas, and he told me that in the 4 years, the number of people on the streets has increased fourfold, and they're veterans. Nope. He said, super vets.
Well, let's that be your final thought because we're out of time. And thank you so much for the call. Everybody will be back on Thursday. Everybody have a great rest of the evening. Take care. Bye-bye.